The following program is paid for by its sponsors, who are solely responsible for its content. Views expressed are not necessarily the views of WMAL.
When the time has come for moving on, you can't go wrong.
Pointing You Home with Eric Stewart on WMAL.
Pointing You Home.
Now, here's your host, Eric Stewart.
Good morning, DMV. I hope you had a great time celebrating our nation's birth, the 4th of July. Thank you, God. So grateful to live in America and to have the freedom to express how we feel, what we think, what we believe, and that everybody has that same right. If you missed any of our shows, look us up on Spotify or iHeartRadio. That's Pointing You Home on Spotify or iHeartRadio. If you're on your computer, all you have to do is Google Eric Stewart Group Radio to listen to us anytime you want.
What makes a great chef? Well, training and technique, of course, plus a great love of food, a generous personality, and the ability to invent hot chocolate.
Hey, I recently saw that Jose Andreas received the Julia Child Award, and my hat's off to you, Jose. I've met him. Nice guy, nice family, and it's been a pleasure to get to know his family and their friends. Jose is a tremendous chef in his own right, and you all know that Haleo was a restaurant he opened up on 7th Street back when what was then the Verizon Center was just opening up. His business has taken off. He's developed a culinary following, and he now has restaurants in many, many places. Julia Child, the Foundation for Gastronomy and Culinary Arts, has announced his nomination, which includes a $50,000 grant that Jose Andreas will give to his nonprofit food organization called World Central Kitchen. "It's such an honor," Andreas said. "Her influence is everywhere. She took her cooking seriously, but at the same time, she knew how to have fun with the food. That is what cooking is all about." Now, there's going to be a gala at the National Museum of American History in November, which will kick off the Smithsonian Food History Weekend. And the chef and his team will create the menu for that evening. And French chef Jacques Pepin, who won the first Julia Child Award, will present it to Andreas. Congratulations, Jose. D.C. residents, if you're thinking you'd like to make a little extra money performing city housing inspections, you might just have your chance. Under a new pilot program that's being developed by the Consumer and Regulatory Affairs Department, you might, if you're a detail-oriented follower, be able to earn some cash by following along and overseeing rental housing inspections. Becoming a professional inspector, you could earn extra income and possibly enjoy seeing how rental properties are maintained. I think it would be pretty fascinating. You probably get to see all kinds, from the really considerate landlord to the slumlord who doesn't do anything right. I think it would probably be a pretty interesting day. In fact, I'm thinking I might just do that for a day. It might make an interesting radio segment. Hey, you know Ballston in Virginia? Do you know why it's called Ballston? Well, there's a Ball family burial ground on North Kirkwood Street that is the burial ground for the Ball family from the 1700s. And that's where we get the name Ballston. But you can't find this graveyard from any road. You can't walk into this from any path. In fact, there's currently, the only way to get through is to crawl around some cars and go through a break in a chain link fence. Why? Because this graveyard happens to be sandwiched between major developments. Who maintains it? Nobody knows. In fact, the county can't legally access the land to maintain it or take actions to preserve it because it was deeded to the heirs of John Ball, who founded it in the 1700s. You may hear more about this in the future, especially as development continues, because the graveyard is not well kept, and perhaps it would be best for their family relations to maybe have the bodies removed and put someplace where it could be cared for, maybe even provided for by Virginia, considering how important Ballston has become. We will see. Hey, if you have a deck, or if you're going to build a deck, or you're going to sell your house with a deck, this is very interesting. Montgomery County has extended its free deck inspections following a recent collapse. Montgomery County Department of Permitting Services is extending its free residential deck inspection service into the summer months. And these inspectors are going to advise residents to look at their decks more carefully. There is a deck maintenance checklist on the website for Montgomery County. If you want more information, you can call them at 240-777-0311. 240-777-0311. Since 2009, DPS has completed a total of 671 deck maintenance inspections. It doesn't sound like a lot of inspections considering it's been 10 years, but that's maybe 67 a year. If you're concerned about the quality of your deck and you want an inspection, call Montgomery County today. Homeowners, what should you know before you sell that first house? Well, I gotta say, the first house that I sold was a home in Kensington, Maryland, that I bought from a guy named Al Borger. It was built in 1938, and I bought it in 1991. When I first got married, I built a beautiful deck off the back. Actually, I hired a deck builder. Don't mean to misrepresent. He built it for me and my family. I just watched. But I did find some beautiful stones, and I created a patio in the back in the shape of a heart as a gift to my wife. Now, this is an interesting conversation that I'm having with you at the moment, but it follows on the heels of an article from the Minnesota property group, Joe Houghton. He wrote about how he bought his first house and how he and his wife were, you know, they moved into it after the honeymoon. He bought a house with his wife, had it renovated while they were on their honeymoon, and then moved into it. And when they were expecting and they needed more space, it was time to go. But there's a feeling of loss. It's not surprising when you consider the importance that we all place on the first events in our homes. And so first date, first kiss, first house, these things, they carry weight with us. And sometimes the emotional connection you have can get in the way of the business that you're trying to do. You've got to deal with the emotions. And I remember selling my house and really wanting someone to appreciate the hard work that I'd put into putting new windows in, replacing the furnace with a high-efficiency furnace. I even excavated the ground so that the downspout water would not run across the front yard, but it would go underground all the way to the street. In fact, while I was digging that by hand, I discovered an old milk bottle from the 1930s when the house was first built. That was pretty cool. So let me be the first to tell you, it's just not easy to let go of your first house. And sometimes it's best just to keep it as a rental property because oftentimes it's modest, it's easy to maintain, and you know it backwards and forwards. Be sure you research your selling process. This is what I'd like to kind of hit on. I've written the Market Ready Guide to help you think through what questions you should ask a realtor, what improvements you could make that will help you sell your home, and even how to approach the entire process of selling. You can download a free copy right now at ericstewartgroup.com. That's called the Market Ready Guide. ericstewartgroup.com to download your free copy or call us at toll-free 800-900-9104. That's 800-900-9104, and we'll mail you a copy absolutely free. You ever put your house on the market, get an offer on the table, and then realize, I don't really want to sell my house? It sounds a little bit like, you know, getting engaged to get married, and it's the wedding day, and you show up and you're standing on the altar, and then you realize that the bride you're going to marry isn't the one you want to marry. What do? Do you go through with it because you got to that point and you don't want to let everybody down? Okay. I don't want to sell my house anymore. It's a feeling. In other words, there's a time in our lives when we come to the very edge of making a decision and there are consequences. And in real estate, if you list your property for sale, you put it on the market, you generate a buyer, the buyer makes a contract with you, you decide that you'll sign the contract, and then you decide you don't want to sell the property, can you do that? The answer is potentially. Once you're under contract, you technically have transferred the title of your property from yourself to the new buyer. But you might say, hey, Eric, how is that possible? They haven't given me the money yet. Aren't we supposed to go to settlement for me to get the title? Doesn't it have to be recorded? And the answer is yes to all of those. But think about this. you agree in a contract what the price will be, what the settlement date will be, any of the contingencies might be. You've agreed to this, and as long as the buyer fulfills their portion of the contract, then settlement occurs. So you actually have transferred the title to the buyer subject to the completion of all of those terms of the contract. And therefore, the buyer could actually sue you if you're under contract to sell the property to them. They could sue you to perform. No, you said you would sell it to me for this price, and you put it in writing, and we have this agreement, and so I'm going to take you to court so that you will perform and I can settle the purchase of this property. That's something a buyer could do. Now, clearly, the buyer's got to get mortgage approved if they're getting a loan. They've got to get the appraisal done for the bank. They might have to go through home inspections and so on. But if you change your mind before you sign a contract, you don't have to fulfill the obligation of selling it. Still, there may be a cost. When you sign a listing agreement with a real estate agent, the typical agreement calls for the seller to pay a commission to the agent for producing a buyer who is ready, willing, and able to purchase the house. The commission doesn't get paid till settlement, but it's due upon presenting a contract with terms that are acceptable. Now, I would say this. I've never forced a seller to have to pay me a commission, even if we get to that point. And I've been at that point after 32 years and now 3,200 homes sold. It's a lot of properties. I've been at that point where clients have said, hey, we've changed our mind. I'll tell you the story of Kurt and Ruth Moss and what happened when they changed their mind right after this.
This is Pointing You Home on WMAL. Here's your host, Eric Stewart.
Kurt and Ruth Moss were downsizing. They had decided that their single-family home was too much and had too many steps, and frankly, they didn't need a basement any longer. And so they needed to go through a process of making a transition to a condo. Well, they called me in. They had talked with me previously, and I'd gone over and met with them. And when I came to their house and we sat down and chatted with them about their whole desire to make the move, it was a time of life thing. Now, it was one of those moments where, as a young real estate agent at the time, I was, I think, maybe 26 years of age, been in the business for just a few years, and Kurt had been the doorman at the Mayflower Hotel for many, many years. And his wife, beautiful, both of them very tall Germans, had emigrated to America from Germany, and they were Jewish. So they had gone through World War II, and they had emigrated and left Germany as German Jews, and they lived a fascinating life in America, raising their kids, and I'd gotten to know them. And it was really just this wonderful, lovely couple that I miss, actually. Kurt and Ruth had me in at their kitchen table. We sat and chatted about the process of making the move, and they said, we're ready. And we signed the listing agreement, and we agreed we would go on the market a couple weeks later. And we did. We prepared a one-page brochure for the property and put a sign up in the front yard, had a lockbox on the door so that agents could get in when the sellers weren't there, when the Mosses weren't home. We put it into the multiple listing service. Everything went live. And then my phone rang. And Kurt said, Eric, he had a German accent, Eric, Ruth and I, we don't want to move yet. We're not ready yet. We're not ready yet, he said. I said, oh, it's okay. He said, what do you mean? I said, Kurt, if you don't want to move yet, then we don't want to sell the house. He said, oh, Eric, you're an angel. And I said to Kurt, Kurt, really, we'll get there when the time comes. When you're ready, we will be ready. I'll come over. I come over to his house later that same afternoon. I took the lockbox off the door, gave him the key back. The sign was down the next day, and the brochures I kept in my office just in case. We pulled it out of the MLS. Property had been on the market for a total of about 24 hours, maybe less. And, you know, he just wasn't ready. Emotionally, he and his wife just weren't ready to make the move yet. And My commitment to my clients is very, very open-handed. You want to sell, great. If you don't want to sell, that's fine. Whatever works for you. We want to help you achieve your goals, and we'll work hard to make that happen. After a week, I got a phone call back. My phone rang, and it was Kurt. And he said, Eric, we're ready now. I said, Kurt, you ready now? He said, yeah, we're ready now. We're ready. We just needed to go through the process, he said. We just had to kind of let go and say goodbye to the house. You know, they've been in that home for some 30, 35 years at that time, and they needed to say goodbye. And they just hadn't done it yet. And that's okay. It's good, actually, to say goodbye to things that are important, to make peace with them, as Marie Kondo would say. Make peace with the things you own. Make peace with the places that you live. Shoot great videos and keep those memories alive. Their house went on the market, and we sold it in less than 10 days. And they moved to a condominium where they enjoyed many years together after that.
People let me tell you about my best friend.
What happens if you hire a friend of yours, somebody you know as a broker, and then you decide not to sell? What do you do now? So listen to this. A guy hired a friend as the broker to sell his house. And he did a great job getting it photographed, listed, arranging the open houses, and handling potential buyers. Multiple offers, all above asking price, and then before accepting any of them, a seller decided not to sell. What do I do now? This was a kind of a Q&A between an anonymous reader talking about their friend, the broker. And this is advice coming from this real estate broker out of Chicago. Okay, this was a 3.5-bath house in Ukrainian Village neighborhood in Chicago, listed for $949,000. Several open houses and lots of showings later, buyer made an offer and negotiated until it was over $15,000 above asking. That was back in 2011. Yet the friends declined the listing and canceled the listing agreement. We've already discussed how a listing is paid at closing more as a convenience, but it's still due if you as a broker perform your job and present a buyer to the seller. Sellers, be aware, you still will owe a commission. By contract, you will owe a commission to the agent if you are presented an offer that is a good and acceptable offer and you just refuse to take it, because the agent doesn't get paid by the hour. The agent gets paid to a commission, which means to put things together. And if the agent is able to put a contract together, put it in front of you, and it's at the asking price, your obligation is to pay them a commission whether you accept the offer or not. Interesting.
Good, my baby, bye-bye. Good, my baby, bye-bye.
How can you emotionally detach from your home when it's time to sell? You spend many happy hours in the back patio. Maybe you even grew up in the house like me. I started living in the house I'm in now when I was 7 years old. I lived there until I was around 21 or 22 after I was graduated from college, and I decided I would go off and live with some guys and live there, and then bought my first house, lived there, and then bought my second house when my family was growing and lived there, and then I bought my parents' house. So I have a lot of affection for the home that I'm in, but I will say it isn't the home that I grew up in anymore. Still, you know, yes it is, but those memories are limited now by the experiences that I've had in the home. It's a little bit like worn pathways. I've had these pathways. I've been going up and down the stairs so many times now with my kids that most of the memories I have now are of my family over the last 12 years in that house. You got to be careful not to make decisions on selling or not selling just based upon emotions. One of our clients lost his wife just a few months ago. He's going through tremendous pain. I even advised him not to sell his house now because, as the executive director for Widow Care, my experience with widows and widowers is that it's best to go through a year of grieving. And this gentleman didn't come through Widow Care. In fact, if he had, I won't work with him. That's my standing promise to the organization Widow Care. I will never generate business that I will do for myself through Widow Care. It's just, I want to keep the absolute clear conscience and avoid every appearance of any selfishness. Frankly, to tell you the truth, in 6 years of Widow Care, I've never actually had anybody come through Widow Care who said, I want you to sell the house, which is great. So it's never been an issue. But if it ever comes up, I will refer them to somebody else and I won't work with them. I just want to clarify that because, as I mentioned, widow care, and this gentleman is a widower, I want you to understand he came as a result of having heard me speak and receiving a gift that I drop off at doors every fall in certain neighborhoods. You know, he recognized what I was saying when I told him he might not want to sell. He recognized that he was making a quick decision and he was still distraught, but he said that he lived every day knowing that his wife would be upset for the way he was living in the house, how he wasn't cooking for himself the way she would, and he wasn't maintaining things. And you could get the sense that he really will be healthier if he goes someplace else. And that's ultimately anybody's decision to make for themselves, of course. I think he's truly ready to sell, even after me asking him questions. And then as we've thought about how we're going to market the home, he's going to move to another place first, pull out the items that are of importance, and then we're going to have everything else auctioned off or go through an estate sale. Now, if for some reason, he calls me, even up to the point of contract, and says, "Eric, I'm not ready. I think you know what I'll do." I will say, "No problem. I'll be here when the time comes." There's a right time for everything. If you're getting ready to sell, thinking about buying or selling or otherwise, please think of the Eric Stewart Group at Long & Foster. We've sold over 100 homes this year and over 3,150 homes in my career. Our goal is to bring you the best service, whether it's buying or selling. The representation we give is to one party only. Fiduciarily, we represent one at a time. Our website's ericstewartgroup.com and our phone number is 800-900-9104. I'm Eric Stewart, and I'll see you next week.
The Eric Stewart Show, pointing you home on 105.9 FM and AM 630 WMAL.